Get Pucked.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Get Pucked podcast. Back again today with you, Matt, Vito, no Dave, unfortunately, but we have a special guest. Today with us, we got Marco D'Amico from MontrealHockeyNow.com and at NMD'Amico on Twitter. Marco, good afternoon. Good to see you.
Good afternoon, guys. I guess I'm filling the other Italian quota here.
Listen. We won't comment.
Minimum two.
That's it. Dave apologized for not being here. He's very sad he can't make it. It's an unfortunate circumstance right up to the last minute. He was scheduled to be here. We'll do our best without him. We're going to soldier on. There's a lot to talk about. Okay. I want to dive into it. Obviously, we're a couple days removed now from the draft, and free agency was a few days ago. There's been a bunch of different storylines. So we'll start at the beginning and kind of work our way to present. So going back to the draft, I mean, we see a lot of people talking about it. There was some very exciting things that happened in the opening couple of minutes of the draft, which we'll talk about in a second. First and foremost, as an overall score, what would you rate the Canadians after that draft? Let's call it from an A to F kind of scale. What do you give Gorton and Hughes for the draft, their first draft with the Canadians?
Top to bottom score?
Just the top to bottom overall. Let's not talk about first pick or anything like that. Just in general, with the prospects they walked away with, what do you think?
I think I'd go probably A minus, given the ability. Like, I was a little confused on a few late round picks. I felt like there were higher ceiling players available, but again, like, I didn't watch some of these guys as thoroughly as they did. So like, the book's out on guys like Engstrom and Nurmi and stuff like that. So we'll see. But I think what I really liked the most was the Canadian second round. That to me just blew right out of the water, like two potential first round talents, actual first round talents, in my opinion, drafted in the second round. So it was really good to see. And honestly, drafting these players is not the problem. Canadians have drafted all kinds of players. It's the development side. Having 13 coaches on the ice at development camp while having like the entire management team in the stands and Martin St. Louis taking notes, like, it's completely different. So it's going to be about optimizing these players' potential. And I think that's going to be the more defining aspect of this draft class than simply the first day's draft class.
Okay, but starting somewhere, you give them an A minus. I mean, listen, it's been a while since I've been in school, but I would take an A minus any day of the week. You know, that's a solid score.
It's like their first five picks, I cannot complain. Even the Philip Mishar, like, there were other guys that I could have possibly gone for, but I wasn't in the room interviewing these guys, and that's an aspect that a lot of us don't take for granted. Like, I wanted Brad Lambert at that pick for the Canadians, because that would have made a ton of sense. But then you find out that Brad Lambert bombed the interviews during the combine, and scouts have a little bit of concern over him going to three teams in 2 years in Liga. I could kind of, there's more to it than just what you see on the ice. And I think that, Mishar, after he was picked, like, just talking to him, interviewing him, and then watching the development camp, like, you see why he was taken. This guy's a water bug. It's really fun to watch him play on the ice.
That's awesome. What do you give a score overall?
I give as a score?
Yeah.
I'm in and around where Marco's pretty much saying. I'm not too familiar with a lot of the players in the later rounds, admittedly. But I'm pretty much as excited as everybody else about Lane Hutson, that's for sure. How do you feel about that pick, Marco? Right now, everyone's talking about how the way he's, his IQ, his talent, the skill level, and I know it's just a little development camp there, but even the glimpses that we saw was pretty impressive. And I gotta think the rumors are true that teams were passing up on him because of his size. But
that's not a rumor, that's a fact.
So I mean, it's not the first time Montreal decides to go against what most teams are doing and avoiding players because of size and going and draft smaller players, because, like, who cares, right? They got the skill, they got the talent, and now I'm pretty sure some teams are probably kicking themselves when they hear that Lane's like 2 years behind in terms of his actual growth and bone structure.
They knew that, but we'll see what that actually gives. I found, like, when he told us that at the press conference, like, it was kind of get, we everybody kind of giggled because it's like, we'll see what happens, man. But like,
yeah, right now you're 5'8".
Yeah, like who cares? Who cares? It really doesn't matter. As long as you're tough enough, as long as you can keep up, as long as you have other skills that set you apart from the rest.
I mean, the NHL is not exactly like it was a few years back during the Big Bad Bruins era of, you know, or the 2011 Cup when your size was so important in a sense. It's still a factor. It's still important, but you're seeing a lot more of the smaller skilled guys coming into the NHL and taking charge, and we're just trending in that direction, right? So it's not, I think teams that are so worried or try to stay away from the smaller players is something that needs to change. Because
how about something that I've read just quickly about Lane, right? Either you can douse the flames or fan the flames with this right now. There's already people making comparables to this kid as a Quinn Hughes light, Adam Fox light, and dare I even say some people making the stretch to say a Cale Makar light. Are these completely off the reservation, or are these things that Habs fans should keep an eye on because this kid has the potential?
I think he has the potential for sure. I mean...
Very nice.
Cale Makar, though? I mean, I would have
laughed. No.
That's
that's a generational talent. Like anybody who is comparing a defenseman to Cale Makar, I don't see one that's quite close in any of the upcoming drafts. I mean, you have a Kiviharju in 2024 that is looking good, but I mean, it's not in that league. So the way that I see Hudson is he could be a Quinn Hughes light. If he's able to put it together, and that could be extremely intriguing for a second round pick. I don't necessarily. Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, the only reason that's a first round talent. Like, I'm sorry. It's a first round talent. A lot of people had him in the first round. Some of the scouts I spoke to with NHL.com had him top 15. And you know, swore to me that if he were just 2 inches taller, would probably have gone top 10 because At a certain point in time, you watch him play. I think anybody who actually watched the scrimmages at development camp, I think it's quite clear, but anybody who watched him play in the U.S. National Development Team, the way he attacks the ice is so intense and with such authority that in today's NHL, you have no choice but to give him space. You have no choice but to back up as a defenseman. You're not going to, very few defensemen are able to like kill a rush play right off the bat. You have, that's why they get drafted so high. Like a Caden Gooley, that's his forte, is stopping rush offense. But not many do that because of confidence questions, because of, you know, some coaches like to play more zone defense. So a guy like Lane Hudson is going to be able to take advantage of that in zone entries. He's going to be able to take advantage of that walking the lines, evading coverage. So there's a lot of ways he can be effective. I don't think he's going to be like a superstar number one defenseman, but you know, if all goes well, a power play quarterbacking, you know, number four would be fantastic right off that bat. You know, that would be excellent value at 62. So it's about tempering expectations. The talent is there to be a top four defenseman, even a top three if he really pushes. But I mean, obviously with the size concerns and injuries that can come into it, and knock on wood for all that, I see more of a top four ceiling and a good one at that. I mean, if he's in your top four, then you have a nice mix because the Canadians, they have towering defensemen right now. Justin Barron, 6'2", Gooley, 6'2", Arber Jacki is 6'4", I think. You got nothing but big boys here. So like, the way that I see it is they're big enough. They can make a risk like that.
Well, I noticed too, Lane Hudson, from what he said during the development camp, he's very cerebral. He broke down a play in a way where every second of that play, he broke it down in his mind to even like a minimal risk in a sense. And I think it was Slafkovský or whatever. I can't remember which player he was talking about, but the way that player was coming in, I'm pretty sure Slafkovský, but his backhand, and he goes, yeah, there's a good chance that the backhand could have gone in, but it was a low risk, and it was a risk I was willing to take because he basically closed off the player in every other regard, in every other aspect. Yeah. So you could tell that he's very cerebral. He's a fluid skater. He's got the skill set. He's got the brain. He's got the IQ. This kid could really, really thrive. It's just a question, like you said, it's a matter of the development, and it's a matter of giving him the time to develop and not just rushing him like we've done in the past. But I have faith in the current administration that we're on a better track with that, and probably in all likelihood they're going to take their time with some of these prospects. And
let's talk about the current administration for half a second with a little bit of a pick that kind of shocked the world for half a second. I mean, it's now, you know, 5-6 days since and the dust has settled. Slafkovský at one. Is this a mistake in your opinion? Is this a calculated risk, or is this simply the right pick? He was the number one in your opinion.
Let's put it this way. I had Shane Wright ranked number one.
Okay.
From what we had heard up until the combine, the Canadians were still kind of leaning towards Shane Wright, but the U18s had kind of rebalanced. So it became a question of personal interest. And that's why the Canadians were so savage, I would say, when it came to the interview questions in Buffalo and in the combine. They really wanted to push the pedal to the metal and see which ones cracked. And at the end of the day, when you look at, you know, growth progression and what could happen, and when you try to draft these players, you really want players that are kind of just consistently going on a steep curve. Slafkovský had the steepest curve of anybody in this draft class. It bar none. And it's not like a lot of people are saying, oh, it's a Kotkaniemi scenario. No. This guy was firmly in the top five conversation from the very beginning of the year because he absolutely dominated the Ivan Hlinka in August of 2021 with Slovakia. I mean, it was basically, it was him, Dalibor Dvorsky, who is going to be drafted in 2023, and Filip Mešar just running roughshod in that tournament, just destroying. And every single tournament or every single event is just his first couple of months in Liga. But after that, he took off there too. So I don't hate the pick in any way, shape, or form. Is it the right pick? We'll find out later on. But fair. I think the Canadians had needs everywhere. They had needs at center. They had needs at wing. They had needs on right defense. Although, they could have gone any way with that pick. And you could have been okay with it because there was no consensus, in my opinion, in everybody's opinion. It was very much a fair game. Now, if for example, Montreal is the first pick next year and they draft Adam Fantilli over Connor Bedard because Fantilli is bigger, well, then we're going to have some questions. But this was so tight that it became more of a question of personality and growth potential than it did position or whatnot. The best thing that I could say, though, is I think it was extremely telling how Shane Wright wasn't even the first center taken in this draft. So the on-ice stuff was A1. And I mean, my interview with Shane Wright went pretty well. But I think teams zeroed in on the expectation and you know, does that create a sense of complacency in his development? Did he take it for granted? You know, is there an ability for him to take it to the next level? Because we have seen exceptional status players be exceptional and then kind of plateau. And that kind of, you know, it's kind of like what happened with Aaron Ekblad. But then Ekblad went on to have a crazy rookie season and won the Calder. So it's give and take. It's a risk. And at this point, it was the riskiest draft, which is why a lot of scouts were down on it.
Do you think that maybe because they acquired somebody like Doc, they felt like they could have passed up on Wright? No, they wanted Slafkovský one way or another.
That decision was made. They wouldn't have gotten into discussions for a guy like Doc if they weren't already leaning Slafkovský, in my opinion. Like the way that I see it is as follows. They wanted to get bigger. Doc can play wing, Doc can play center, but I mean, if you're going to trade for him and give a 13th overall pick, it's probably because you think he's going to be a center. If he's going to be a center, then, you know, where do you put Shane Wright? Or where do you put Logan Cooley for that matter? To me, I think it makes sense in hindsight now, but I think ultimately, if you tell me Kirby, Doc, Shane Wright, I see similar potential, right? I see one B, you know, first line center possibility, but realistically second line center potential. I still think that Shane Wright can, you know, if all goes well, if he really hits his ceiling could be a first line center. But I just, you know, given what's happening now and where he's going to play and yep. who he's going to play behind, yep. I'm not too sure about that anymore.
So let's talk about that. Hold on a second. Just that 13th overall pick, because I'm very curious about it. It was pretty polarizing when the trade went down. Everybody lost their minds that, oh, you package Romanov away. He's a fan favorite. He was a pretty solid defenseman. You knew what you're getting with him. And he gets unloaded for the 13th overall pick. In your opinion, did they do the right thing in packaging the 13th away to bring in a guy like Doc, or would they have been better suited of drafting at 13?
I mean, like a lot of people are saying they would have preferred Nazar, like drafting Nazar, which is what,
because that's who was at 13. Yeah, exactly.
Then picking Doc. The way that I see it is as follows. The 2019 NHL draft was far deeper than the 2022 NHL draft, and Doc went third, and that to me was possibly a reach. He probably should have gone 7, 8, 9, right? But that still makes him a higher ceiling player, in my opinion, yeah, than Nazar. And I like Nazar. Nazar was in my top 10.
Yeah, you mentioned that in the last time you were on the show, yeah, that you were
exactly. So I like the kid. I think, you know, I think he should have been a top 10 pick regardless, but if you're looking at what the Canadians are doing, Nazar is too much like Suzuki, in my honest opinion, for them to really kind of have a difference. And the Canadians wanted to get bigger at center. The Detroit Red Wings took the biggest center that they could possibly get that has a hope of being a top six player in Marco Kasper. After that, everybody's under 6 foot, right? It's mm-hmm. that. So when you have a goal in mind for the future of your team and you already have Nick Suzuki as your future number one, your number two better be a guy that's fast and big. And there's not too many people that fit that profile. So I can understand going for Kirby Doc, and I am going to state this on the record. I think Kirby Doc under Martin St. Louis is going to be a different player than what we've seen so far.
Oh, 100%.
Well, that's, I think, people's biggest concerns, right? They're looking at a guy drafted a couple years ago, third overall, albeit, like you said, a reach, but he was third. You have very high expectations for this kid. And frankly, he's been in the league now a little bit, and it seemingly is underwhelmed. He had that injury to his hand or his wrist, you know, and it's, people come with that. They don't really take all these things into consideration. Well, they see a big guy that never really panned out versus potential.
He was also in a very shit situation in Chicago too, right? Look at the mess that was going on in Chicago.
I don't disagree.
Coaches changing, scandals going on.
Yep.
Players coming in and out of there. It was so much
being shifted to the wing, center.
When you think of it, yeah, under Martin St. Louis, if the plan is to put Kirby Doc as a center, he's going to make him thrive and work as being the center. Montreal's got the luxury right now of time on their hands. Everyone knows we're going through a retool, rebuild in a sense. Yeah, there's always going to be a certain population of the Montreal fan base that's going to be a little bit impatient. So what? Right now, the majority of Montreal fans and people who follow Montreal are on this page and are on board with the whole full rebuild. Heck, there's people that still want them to tank for next year. You know, we're messing with the tank if they acquire Pierre-Luc Dubois, or they're going to do something. It's, no. You know what I mean?
Is Pierre-Luc Dubois going to play in Nets? I don't understand.
Yes. Well, you know what I mean?
How does that defense right now? How does that defense and net? I'm sorry. That is a bottom five defense. And if it's just Jake Allen and Montembeau, if Price doesn't play, and even if it's Price playing, it's not the Price we knew. I mean, from the net to the blue line, it's basically bottom five team. The only hope they have is to score a bunch. Yeah. So they have to.
Team that has a worse defense than them, in my opinion, is Anaheim right now, and that's because they only got five defensemen signed.
Yeah, and I would probably have gone Arizona.
But Arizona's the worst of everything. You know, they're like implied. they're a bottom three team implied.
You got it worse, so I'm going.
I think you're right.
I think Chicago as well. Like after Jones, it gets pretty scarce as well. So like, you know, you got to look at it from all perspectives. But this Canadiens team, we put out an article today about this. But you know, the Atlantic Division either stayed status quo or improved significantly. Right. The only team that I think might go backwards are the Boston Bruins, because they're still waiting on what's going on with Bergeron and Krejci. If those guys come back, I don't necessarily see that team being a bottom 10 team, even if there are some injuries. But a team like Detroit that greatly improved and, mm-hmm. and have Simon Edmundson coming and Mo Sider and Lucas Raymond are ready to take the next steps. You look at a team like Buffalo that finished the season on fire last year with their prospects taking the next step. You know, if Tage Thompson has a similar second half of the season for a full season in Buffalo, I don't see Buffalo necessarily being a bottom feeder either. And then you look at a team like Ottawa, and they just went ham. Like, the Melnick daughters absolutely gave
cash.
And Pierre Dorion did some good business, in my opinion. I think I don't think there's anybody in the league right now that wouldn't think that the summer belongs to the Senators so far.
It's an unbelievable story in Ottawa. As much as it pains us as Canadians fans, you got to tip your hat where it's due. And what Ottawa's been doing is on another level. Those fans are going to be in for a treat this year, certainly.
So what I would say is take notes. Because Ottawa did not, you know, for better or for worse, that it was Melnick or that it was a planned situation, didn't spend, always tried to stay low. And then when it was time to pounce, when they felt like their prospects, their core was ready to take the next step, that's when they went and started acquiring elite pieces. And I think that in and of itself is what is going to drive this forward, because you're bringing in guys like DeBrincat. DeBrincat is going to make the transition, you know, for next year, like for a guy like Stützle or Josh Norris, really just kind of
shoulders
that in. And I think I don't think they're done. You know, they still have a lot of cap space, and that ability to spend as your core is now signed and your structure is basically outlined and you know what it's going to be. I mean, the only big contract they're going to have is Stützle and Sanderson, and then they're still flying. It's still going to be easy. So that's what you have to do. The Canadians are probably going to lock up Cole Caulfield within the next 8 months to a long-term deal. You know, they're going to have prospects coming in. I think before the Canadians go and make splashes like that, you still need another year. They have pieces, but the difference is they have contracts that are holding them back.
Well, that's it, right? They absolutely got to get rid of some of these albatrosses that exist on the team before anything can happen.
I think it's going to happen by itself. Like, as time goes by, those deals become less of an albatross, because it's far easier to move a contract that's $5 million for 1 year.
Absolutely.
The issue is people, and that's why, you know, a guy like Kent Hughes doesn't want to retain any salary, because he doesn't want to be on the hook for those contracts next year, the year after, when he's going to need it, because he's going to sign these youngsters to contracts.
So let's talk free agency. You're mentioning about Kent Hughes, and the people are saying, you know, people, I always come back to social media. These are the people that I refer to. And a lot of them, you know, we, the people, for better or worse, were sitting back and they were upset or disappointed that Kent Hughes was fairly inactive. I think only a handful of AHL signings. Otherwise, you know, nothing happened. Now, there's a huge contingency of the fan base that said that's exactly what he should have done. Do not go get players. Do not try to bring people in. They are not at that point yet. Try and make trades happen to get some of these bigger contracts off your books and make sure that you don't get fleeced doing it, right? You have time.
He did add. I mean, not necessarily on free agency, but, you know, Dadonov's in now. Kirby Dach's in now. There are some changes that have happened
definitely
to the team. It's just it didn't
definitely
happen on July 13th.
They're talking about the trades. I think people expected trades.
I still think trades are going to happen, and he's still working on them. I mean, he's even said it said as much on his press conference yesterday. It's not easy. There's a lot of teams that haven't done anything yet. Think about that one. There's some teams that just have not acquired players, haven't made the changes, and teams around them got better. Winnipeg is a perfect example of that. They didn't do a whole lot. Who knows what they're working on? There's other teams that didn't do a whole lot yet. Who knows what they're working on? Now, do I think something's going to happen with Kent Hughes and the Montreal Canadiens? Yeah, because the guy's working so hard to do so. But the only thing is he might have to put a bit of water in his wine to kind of, you know, accept doing something that maybe he's really stubborn or really adamant about not doing. You know, maybe he's going to have to put in a little something to move the Petrie contract if he has to move it. I don't think he has to move Petrie personally.
He doesn't have to move Petrie.
He could literally, and at this point, if you're not going to get the value that you want because Petrie had a down year last year and teams may be reluctant or whatever, hold on to him. It's not like we have a bunch of right-hand defensemen anyways. Keep him, and he only wants to move, not because the Montreal Canadiens want to move, it's because Petrie wants to do it for family reasons. You signed the contract, buddy.
I think at the end of the day, when you look at a guy like Petrie, once John Klingberg signs, that's when Kent Hughes is going to be able to play ball, because right shot D's are perhaps after top six centers, the rarest position to fill. Top four right shot D's there are far more left shot defensemen than there are right shot defensemen in this league. And when Chris Letang got signed, I was like, there's one guy left. I wasn't expecting Brent Burns to be moved. That, you know, Mike Greer, kudos to him. But
surprising.
When you look at what's available now, there are about four teams going after Klingberg. Once Klingberg signs, there's going to be a lot of teams just looking at themselves going, what are we doing? Are we going to be taking on this contract? Are we going, you know, can we make it work? And I think that's where, I don't think Ken Hughes is going to be able to get the entire contract off the books. I think he's going to have to take back a contract to kind of make it work, similar to how he got rid of Weber's contract. You take the example that I've used for a while now is if the trade goes down with Dallas, whatever Dallas decides to give him in terms of picks or whatever, and then trading Anton Khudobin, who has 1 year left at, I believe, $3 million, back so that everything kind of evens out. And then they send Khudobin to the minors to play with Caden Primo. And then, you know, that makes a little bit more sense. And then you can call Khudobin up and down if there's injuries to Price or Montembeau or Allen. Stuff like that you have to be creative that way. But I do not see a universe right now where the Canadians are going to give up draft picks to move a guy like Jeff Petrie. I think they know his value. I think teams are trying to get Kent Hughes to flinch. And for all intents and purposes, from what we've seen so far, Kent Hughes doesn't flinch.
He does. Yeah, he doesn't budge, this guy. Man, I mean, I would be more excited about moving Hoffman's contract than I would Petrie, in a sense. Right, I know Petrie will go at some point, but the Hoffman contract, even though the guy could probably still get you a 20 goal season, it's $4.5 million for another 3 years, if I'm not mistaken, or is it 2 years?
Two.
It's 2 more years. So he's got 2 more years at $4.5 million. We have so many players and so many wingers on the team that can do what he does and are already bringing a similar game as him. We need to move a lot of those redundant type of players.
Yeah, and I think that's in progress. I think it's a difficult thing to do right now because so much money was spent.
It's ridiculous.
Teams being so strapped right now, I think that's the problem, right? We always assume, the offseason is when we're going to do it. Well, the problem is that these teams want to throw money. They get desperate. They throw big money. That reduces the amount of ability for other players. Like a guy like Nazem Kadri right now is not going to get what everybody thought he was going to get if he signs a contract. Nobody can afford that. That's a desirable location. Same thing with Klingberg. Klingberg better sign soon, right? Because there's not that many teams that can give him what he wants. So it's going to force these teams, these players, to take like short-term deals so they can cash in at a time where the cap is a little bit more, you know, flexible for teams. And I think that is where the situation is with Montreal. I feel like if Jeff Petrie stays, okay, put him back on the first power play unit and, you know, just, you know, explain to him that passing to Petrie is an option. To Caulfield is an option.
Is an option. Yeah. Put it in your repertoire. Yeah.
You know, it's something you can do. It's not just a Nick Suzuki thing. Here, look, Chris Mywind will show you how to do it. But basically, you have to be able to put him in a position where he's going to look good. And he's always looked good on the power play. His shot is phenomenal, and that's where he thrives. And, you know, the fact that he did so well under Martin St-Louis, you know, when he came in, that was all 5-on-5. So true. If he can, you know, bring that power play aspect to his game and he ends up having another 40-point season next year, well, all this notion that Jeff Petrie is on the decline will slowly go away. And I think that becomes far easier to move him, be it a deadline or next offseason. But I still remain confident the Canadians are going to be able to work something out this summer. It's just a question of dominoes falling.
If it's not him, who do you expect to be the player that does? Because I believe somebody has to move out. This isn't a matter of let's just start the season with exactly what we have. I think they have too many contracts. They have too much money. right? Aren't they overcapped at this point? Or are they just under?
Paul Byron is not going to be starting the season. So right off the bat, there's
LTIR, you save his money
right there.
Yeah.
So they theoretically can go into the season. It's just basically Kirby Dach and some other peripheral guys that need to be signed at this point to fill out the roster. Where I think things may be interesting would be, like, for example, Hoffman. I don't know what the interest is in Drouin right now. Jeff Petrie is probably the player that makes the most sense to move, in my opinion. But if you drafted a guy like Slafkovský, who plays left wing, and you currently playing Cole Caulfield on the left wing, and then you have Jonathan Drouin, and then you have Mike Hoffman, where is Slafkovský going to play if he's good enough to play in the NHL? You're not going to play him on a fourth line. And that's probably where Ryan Poehling is going to slot unless you
move Caulfield to the right wing, which is.
But then you have the same problem on the other side.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, Anderson moves down, Gallagher moves down, and you have Dadanov, who we don't even know where he's going to be plugged in, right? The fourth line.
What about all this chatter to do one amazing ability to kind of clean house? There's all this chatter with the Pierre-Luc Dubois situation, because obviously you got to give a lot to get there. Well, I've been hearing things and seeing things. They got three players involved going to Dubois with picks and all this other jazz. If you unload three players, you solve a lot of your problems.
Yeah, but Matt, these players that are rumored, if those players are actually rumored, there's a good chance this trade would have happened by now, in a sense, right?
I'm not in anybody's room to know why a trade has happened or hasn't happened. I just listen and I enjoy seeing the rumor mill go wild, but there is a lot of smoke about this Pierre-Luc Dubois situation. A lot.
I think that the Montreal Canadiens, before even attempting anything with the Pierre-Luc Dubois situation, need to move money. I think that's what's holding. I think there's a lot of decisions that are being held up right now across the league because certain free agents haven't signed yet. There are teams willing to throw money at these free agents. Like John Klingberg, I believe, has like Detroit, Seattle, Ottawa looking at him. So if that's the case, you know, once he signs, those teams are going to want to fill that hole. And if they're willing to throw like $7-8 million at Klingberg, well, 6.25 for a guy like Petrie, if you really want to start competing right now, could make sense. And it would be at a low price. It doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, a crazy price, but as long as the salary makes sense. Once they gain that flexibility, I don't know that they'd be able to make that trade for Pierre-Luc Dubois. I don't know. I don't have any information on that. All I know is the Canadians are interested, have spoken to the Jets quite a bit. Kent Hughes and Kevin Cheveldayoff were seen together on the draft floor. The only thing I can really tell you, and this, I guess, is pure speculation, a Pierre-Luc Dubois deal becomes less and less likely the longer the summer takes.
I think I agree with that.
If he's still unsigned come training camp, then we have another. Then it's open season, because at that point, then the Canadians can play, because they'll have clarity on price probably by training camp. They'll have clarity on Paul Byron by training camp. And we don't know who's going to be not healthier or healthy come training camp. So there's other moves that are going to happen. Teams are going to want to address this situation or address that situation. It's going to allow for some fluidity. But unfortunately, I feel like the Canadians wanted to do much more than what they've done so far.
Yeah, they're being held up by a bunch of like things. Like you say, it's a domino situation. When a few of these dominoes start falling, we're going to probably see a lot of momentum. But I think the more important question that I'm curious in your opinion, after Dach was brought in, and presumably they're going to sign him, does Pierre-Luc Dubois make sense? I know Kent Hughes smiled and yesterday in his press conference, you know, they asked him questions about it. I forgot which reporter it was, but he kind of coyly says, I don't know if I can talk about it. He looks to the side, comes back. He goes, anytime there's a big young centerman out there, you're interested in getting him. We have interest. That basically is what he was saying. Now, does it make sense? Does it make sense to go after him at this point of where the Canadians are at with what they're looking to do, even though guys like him don't always become available? So maybe it's the opportunistic sort of sentiment that existing there with Hughes and Gorton that are like, well, we have this thing. It's here. We might as well investigate. Otherwise, they wouldn't be going there at all. Should they be doing this? Is this something that they should do?
Look, the way that I see it is a lot of people are like, oh, it doesn't make any sense. You have Doc, you have Suzuki, you have, and then you'd have Dubois. Like, how would that make sense? What if Doc was the main piece going back for Pierre with Dubois? And that
Vito said that to me a few days ago.
I said that the other day.
I got to give it to him. He said it.
That's the thing. Like, that's the, like, I was a little thrown off because obviously, you know, you see that kind of move happen. You're like, okay, cool. They went and got their player. That's crazy. But at the same time, you know, roster players were involved and you got to move out salary. So it immediately becomes a little confusing. Now, I think that if you bring in a guy like Pierre-Luc Dubois, there is a universe out there where you could have a Pierre-Luc Dubois and a Kirby Doc on the same Montreal Canadiens team. It all depends on what are the assets going the other way. I don't think this is going to be a very cheap deal if it goes through. I think that this would be like a deal that Montreal Canadiens fans will probably be divided on because it will be expensive. And then the contract that's necessary for that. So if they have any snowball's chance of signing a guy like Pierre-Luc Dubois, Jeff Petrie has to go. And then whoever they're trading for to Winnipeg has to have salary attached to it. So definitely, that's the only way I could see it happening. Personally, for me, I would be shocked, mildly shocked, if Kirby Doc were immediately traded to go and get a guy like Pierre-Luc Dubois, since the interest in Pierre-Luc Dubois predated the draft. What I think would happen is Doc and Dubois would play on the same line, where Dubois would take the left side faceoffs and Doc would take the right side faceoffs. And I think that kind of combo then allows a guy like Doc to really kind of develop into what he is.
It could also work out in a way where Doc does start off as a 3C and develops properly, because, you know, we know what happened in Chicago, and being behind Suzuki and Dubois is not a bad gig whatsoever, at least for the first year or two.
Well, I guess Dvorak got shipped out then.
Well, I'm going with the rumors that are being said, right? Dvorak shipped out, and Winnipeg apparently has been interested in Dvorak for a while. So assuming that, you know, like you said, there's a lot of smoke and these are the names that are being mentioned, I am assuming that Christian Dvorak would be one of the pieces going the other way. And now you're looking at a first line of Suzuki and Dubois maybe second. And then Doc, that's probably the best center lineup that the Montreal Canadiens have had since 1995, 1996.
I mean, you want to talk about
Turgeon and Danfus.
Talking about the rumors, though, like of the what could go back, I think anyone that doesn't start with a first round pick is not happening. Is that something that they need to do, though? Because I don't think they want to get rid of theirs or Florida's at this point with what Florida's been doing on this offseason with the players that have left. I mean, that all of a sudden turned out to be somewhat of a much nicer first-round pick than this juggernaut Florida team that was last year that theoretically could have finished, you know, somewhere, could have gone all the way conference finals or maybe the Stanley Cup next year, if all things being equal.
That really depends on where the Canadians want to go. And I will explain this. You can put a condition on a pick that's not yours that you currently own, though. So, for example, if Montreal trades any one of those picks, could be top 10 protected. What do you know? And then you just would, you know, defer the pick to the 2024 draft, where by all intents and purposes, from what the Montreal Canadiens have said over the last little bit, is probably when they're going to want to start competing, right? So I am of the ilk that, you know, you can be creative in that kind of a trade. And, you know, it really is something of a something of an option for the Canadiens. Like, a lot of people are like, don't trade the pick. This doesn't make sense.
Yes, they
are. Don't trade the pick blindly is what I would say. Protect yourself, because you don't want to be there's a world where you can be giving them a high pick.
Absolutely.
No, trading a pick before trade deadline is always risky.
But do they accept it if it's not, you know, kind of like perhaps the same thing with the Sherratt thing when they traded it? It wasn't top 10 protected and they were cool with it. Would Winnipeg be okay with that, having it not top 10?
I don't know that Montreal would execute that deal without some form of protection, in my opinion.
Where Montreal's at right now and what they're trying to establish.
Well, I think they would put protection on Florida.
No, guarantee. Yeah. But I'm saying any first round pick that they acquire or have, in their possession, which we know is Florida's at this moment, it's going to be top 10 protected. They're building. They don't want to set themselves back, even if it means that, you know, they're trying to acquire Dubois. They do acquire somebody like Dubois. They want to make sure that they've got as many darts that they can throw at the board in the earlier rounds of the first round for next couple of years.
Well, I mean, especially next draft, right?
Especially
next
draft.
You really don't know. So, like, that's why a lot of people are like, no, you should tank, because, you know, guys like Zach Benson and Adam Fantilli, you know, outside of, you know, the obvious Connor Bedard, Matvei Michkov, you have Leo Carlson. These are all guys, you know, that are probably going to be as good, potentially, as a Pierre-Luc Dubois. Like, why are you sacrificing this to go and get that? Like, if you've gotten Kirby Dack, isn't the biggest organizational need now a right shot defenseman that is going to be there full time? And should you not be looking at something like that as opposed to, because it becomes problematic. It really does become problematic in the way that fans will look at this, because they're looking at it with just the roster in place. Like, I don't think many people would have thought that a guy like Alexander Romanov could be flipped with a third and a fourth for Kirby Dach, but it happened. You know, so you're thinking outside of the box that way. That allows you to move over a little bit. And as the Canadians continue to move forward with this roster change, I don't think any addition of a forward, like, I don't think the addition of a Pierre-Luc Dubois to this roster and the subtraction of two or three vets or three roster players, I don't think that puts the Canadians over the top. I still think they don't measure up to other teams in the East. So you can do that and still not be competitive, because you know that the defense and the goaltending is still not going to be enough.
But I even wrote this on Twitter the other day from the podcast. Pierre-Luc Dubois does address many different needs or many different aspects for the Montreal Canadiens. Besides the fact of being a big body center who plays a bit more of a power forward type of game when he really wants to, he also brings in the whole francophone aspect, which, albeit Montreal right now is only relying on Drouin and Savard. So a lot of people who are saying, you know, and are clamoring saying they should trade Drouin, get rid of him, get rid of that contract. Could you imagine what would happen if they were to move Drouin and then there's only Savard? There's that part of the population that's going to scream, cry, yell, bitch, and it's going to overshadow everything Kent Hughes has done. And you kind of want to avoid having that even happening or even being a possibility. As stupid as it may sound, there is some truth to what I'm saying, because you know it's going to happen. But if they bring somebody like Pierre-Luc Dubois, who is that, you know, first-time big body center, francophone, French-speaking player who we just so also happen to need on their team, you know, it makes moving somebody like Drouin and the fact that there would only be two francophones on the team a little more digestible. I mean, look how many people bitched and complained about Deno going, and then you see what Deno did, and they're still bringing it up, right? Now, Deno is not Pierre-Luc Dubois, but I would think that even when it comes to Drouin, I don't think Ken Hughes is in a rush to move him just yet. Plus, his value is like very low. And I think that trade deadline's a perfect time. So I'm bringing this up mainly because Drouin's name, even now on Twitter, keeps coming up as get rid of him, get rid of him, get rid of him.
Yeah, well, I mean, people will keep trying to get rid of him, and that's totally fine. It. But I don't think Kent Hughes is in the business of selling low.
So exactly.
I'm gonna leave that there. If Drouin is healthy next year, if he's able to put up a full 50-point pace or plus season, then you could easily retain 50% of that and trade him at deadline. Like, I don't think that that's a problem at all. And in fact, where I would even state is on the fears that there won't be enough French-Canadian presence. You know, you also have guys coming up. Like, the Canadians know and can market the fact that they have young players from the province coming up in Laval. Harvey Pinard is going to be pushing for a spot for sure this year, and probably will be the first recall of forward. So there's going to be options there. I think the biggest thing is the fact that Pierre-Luc Dubois wants to play in Montreal. That's the difference. That's what makes this intriguing. That's why, you know, a lot of people will say what you just said, like, oh, you know, I'm going to shut people up. I believe in having local players. I don't believe in having local players at the expense of value. I don't believe in having
local players. That's the key. Thank you. That's the key.
I don't believe there is always a way where you could put yourself in a position to go and get these guys. And if the Canadians can put themselves in a position where the value is right and they're not giving Sergachev for Drouin, for example, they're not giving up on elite talent for maybes, there's a difference. And this kind of a trade, the difference is Pierre-Luc Dubois has far more track record than Drouin did at the same age when that trade went down. You know what you're getting in Pierre-Luc Dubois, and there's still room for upside if you play.
Yeah, didn't he have a big monster? What was it?
He had 60 points this past 28 season.
28 goals.
Yeah, that was the season. But then he was on a Team Canada. I forgot what the tournament was. And he was very, very good as well. Didn't that just happen? The World Championship? Yeah.
So it's again, what I'm trying to get at. Like, this is a player, if put in the right situation, could be an impact forward. And if you already have a guy like Nick Suzuki, who's 5'11", built strong, but not necessarily, you know, imposing. Well, if you bring in Kirby Dach and Pierre-Luc Dubois, well, now the narrative is different. And you have this Slafkovský coming in. Now, all of a sudden, the Montreal Canadiens, who have been pegged as small since, good Lord, the days of Saku Koivu, are now all of a sudden towering everywhere. So this is why it's difficult to see, envision, and play with when it comes to stuff like this. The biggest takeaway I would get is it's a perfect storm. And I think that's the key here. Drouin, that trade was forced because of desperation, right? We all remember, and I don't blame Jonathan Drouin a lick for any of this, Marc Bergevin traded for a winger and threw him at center.
And hoped
for him to become the number one center automatically. It was, in my opinion, a pretty careless decision. A decision based on the fact that he didn't want to pay the real price you needed to pay for a top six center. And to the detriment of Drouin, because everyone just compares him to that. And it, in my opinion, wasn't his fault to begin with. A guy like Pierre-Luc Dubois, well, that's a guy that can turn around and basically, you know, if someone oversteps, he can get right back into your face and say, like, what did you just say? And really stand his ground. And he can do that on the ice. He can do that in the room. And, you know, the biggest thing you're going to get from people in terms of criticism for him is, oh, he's a diva. Oh, it's his second team that he wants to leave now.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, Johnny Gaudreau left Calgary for less money. There is a reality that players want to play where players want to play. And if they don't want to if they don't want to extend with that team so close to being a free agent, they have the right to do that. It's not even the first time this happens in Winnipeg. Jacob Trouba forced the trade to the team he wanted to be traded to in New York in 2018.
Adam Fox did it.
2019. Yeah, Adam Fox was a different story. He didn't even have a contract yet.
But still managed to get to where he wanted to go. Yes,
but that's a difference. When you're an RFA and you have 2 years left and you could just keep taking your arbitration payout and you just take that one-year contract, do it again the following year, and then boom, you're in free agency. There is nothing the team can do. Winnipeg, you know, they want a big offer, but they're kind of handcuffed as well. Like, they can play the patience card and wait another year and just go to arbitration and have the arbiters give Dubois what he's owed and you know, restart this process again next year and see if there are better offers. They can do that. It's just you're mitigating value, because right now, Pierre-Luc Dubois, if you sign him right now to a long-term deal, you have two restricted free agent years. And then depending on the length, say you sign him for 7 years, right? Because that's the only thing Montreal or any team acquiring him right now can do, is sign him to 7 years, unless Winnipeg signs him to 8 years and then trades him. So you'd have 2 years of restricted free agency and then 5 years of unrestricted free agency. Those 2 years of restricted free agency are extremely valuable, because once you get to unrestricted free agency years, the value of a contract goes way up. That's where trade protection comes in as well. So you have to be careful, because there is far more value in getting a Pierre-Luc Dubois right now from a cap perspective than in 2 years from now when he's on the open market. And I think that's where a lot of people need to calibrate the expectation. I'm still not convinced. I'm still not convinced that the Canadians are going to get Pierre-Luc Dubois because there are other teams involved. But I think, you know, we were talking about the Rangers initially being involved. The signing of a guy like Vincent Trocheck to as long as he did, 6-year deal, I think takes them out of that equation permanently, because now you have Zibanejad and Trocheck basically stuck 1-2. So it then the potential suitors are starting to shrivel up, and the best value you can get for Dubois is ensuring that he signs with the team that acquires him. Similar to what happened with Max Pacioretty when he was traded from Montreal to Vegas. The value for Vegas, until he was traded for future considerations, was getting him...
The very talented future considerations.
Yes, yeah. Well, you know, getting him on that extension, that is the value. And you see more value because of that. That's where Pierre-Luc Dubois has his power. That's where Pierre-Luc Dubois can say, I don't want to sign long-term here. Oh, I would like to sign long-term here. Do they have an offer for you? And then that starts to create a market. Now, do I think Pierre-Luc Dubois only wants to play in Montreal? No, I think he's far smarter than that. I think there are other places in the league that he'd like to play.
I think he's got a list of Montreal's very much up there, maybe even at number one, but if there's a number two and number three there.
Yeah, I think it's one of the top destinations for sure. But
well, you heard it here first. Marco thinks you shouldn't hold your breath on this one. I think at the end of the day, that's what we're saying.
I'm not saying I'm just saying that it's I know the Canadians are interested, very much interested. I just do not think that right this summer is the right time to do it based on their cap situation. I think that if they revisit this next offseason, that's when a trade could probably happen. Now, I could be totally wrong and it could happen this summer, or it doesn't even happen at all.
That's fair.
But I think
that's
if it does happen, next summer makes the most amount of sense, because that's when it becomes far easier to clear a lot of these contracts that'll have 1 year left on them. You know, you think about Hoffman that you wanted to trade. It's far easier to move Hoffman with 1 year left on his deal.
Definitely.
You know, Drouin's deal will have expired. Dadonov's deal will have expired. Jake Allen's deal will have expired. You'll have clarity on Carey Price. Like, it'll be a better time to make those kinds of moves.
Yeah, so next year coming off the books right away is Dadonov. You got Paul Byron. You've got Jake Allen. And you got Drouin. Quite a bit of guap there.
It's going to be an exciting time for next year, but I do have one final question before we let you go, Marco. Who is the next captain of the Montreal Canadiens?
Oh, man. Nick Suzuki.
Look at the things he's doing already.
I think so.
Nick Suzuki was present at the draft.
Yeah.
With the team.
He's sticking around in Montreal.
He's at every event. He was with the top prospects the day before the draft at a Montreal event. Basically, he's the Montreal Canadiens poster boy right now.
Yeah,
I think so. The writing is on the wall. And when Kent Hughes said that they weren't ready to name a captain because they don't want to put that player in a position they're not ready for yet, that was like ding, 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 ding. Because Brendan Gallagher has been ready to be a captain since...
Yeah, forever. Yeah.
For like 10 years now. I don't... You know, I'm starting to
He aged out of it. I think it passed him by. It's unfortunate. I think if situations would have been different, he would have been that captain.
I think he's an extremely valuable assistant captain to a very young captain. I think that's what
makes I think so too. I think it makes a lot of sense.
And we look back at past captains. What Max Pacioretty under his captaincy did not have was this version of Brendan Gallagher, in my opinion. Thomas Plekanec and Andrei Markov were great players, but I don't think they have the league-wide respect that a guy like Gallagher has or commands from hockey players. I think that he killed himself on the ice season in, season out. And that respect kind of reverberates in terms of leadership.
All right. Well, Marco, thank you so much for joining us today. Again, it's MontrealHockeyNow.com is where you can catch all of his fine writing. He's pumping out articles left, right, and center. You should definitely check it out if you haven't already, guys. You can also catch him on Twitter at NMDamico. Vito, anything? Any last little bit? Anything you want to say? You good? You happy boy?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a while. It's been quite a half a season covering this team, so it's been fun. It's going to be fun to get a little bit of vacation time now.
Well deserved.
Definitely, Yeah, and then when the Canadians start up prospect camps in September, it's going to be absolutely run and gun. And it's going to be an exciting time because there's a lot of opportunity in the organization this year.
We'll be reaching out again when the season starts.
Oh, don't you worry about that. So thanks very much, everybody else. Always, thank you for listening. You know the drill by now. Like, subscribe, the whole works. You know where to check us out on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter. We're always commenting and keeping up to date with the latest stuff that's out there. So again, that was our draft and our free agency sort of little post-mortem. Hopefully we'll have maybe one more thing coming out before we also take perhaps a little bit of a break for the offseason. So for Dave, who's not here, sadly, Vito, Marco, again, thanks for joining, and myself, this was Get Pucked.